Hello, friends. We have been, well, this is our 59th program in this wonderful book, Letters on Occult Meditation. It's been a little while again since I've been able to return, and it's already February, isn't it? The first of February, and we have been in a quite a long, what's called letter, with many sections. And we've been dealing with the interior nature of meditation. We've been dealing with the approach of the first three aspects of divinity, the Raja Yoga method, which he likens to the first ray and its subsidiary ray, and then the second ray method of love and wisdom. It seems to be the method that is most used now, and he gives the plural. He says other supporting rays are involved, probably along the 2, 4, 6 line. And then he offered us an understanding of the third ray method and how to use intellectual application of all that has been learned on the other two major rays. So much of this particular section has been on living the sanctified life. Always synthesis must be attained, but always the fundamental coloring or tone remains. All the seven rays will be involved, of course, but the great ray of indigo with its seven sub-rays will be paramount. And he's telling us we will, in the next round, probably in this chain, find the most unfolded method of the use of the intellect. It will be the round of complete, of supreme mental development, and will carry its evolving monads to heights undreamt of now. So those are monads primarily on the third ray, but maybe on the subsidiaries to the third ray, which in one sense can be considered not only five, ray five, and to a certain extent ray seven, but all of them, as the Brahmic ray is ray three and subsumes four, five, six, and seven. So there are a couple of ways to look at rays four and six, either as subsumed in ray three, or as related to the second ray, to the soft line rays. Let's see where we are here. Okay. And maybe I can show something here. When we look at these four subsidiary rays to the third ray, they are indeed subsidiary. And there is a green line connecting with all of them. But at the same time, you may notice that under the third ray overlordship or prominent position, We have rays 4 and 6 with Master Serapis and Master Jesus going in a blue line towards the Christ. And at the same time, rays 5 and 7 going in red lines towards the Manu. Maybe you can. Maybe you can see that. I think so. Yeah, here we are. Two red lines and two blue lines, but still subsidiary to ray three, where we presume Paul the Venetian master, is in charge on that level. So, these charts do hold some very interesting and intricate suggestions of relationship or suggestions of intricate relationship. Now, so this round marks the height of the second method, that through love wisdom. And it is the fourth round where that within the emotional, that wherein the emotional reaches a high point of vibration and where and there is direct connection between the fourth plane of harmony, between the emotional body or the fourth principle, the quaternary, that's the personality, the fourth root race, or the Atlantean, which coordinated the astral. I mean, right now in the Aryan race, we have the opportunity to coordinate the mental, and for some, there is the coordination even of the Buddhic vehicle. So that's where we are right now. And we're beginning a new section. Now, letter eight will will shortly be over. Well, maybe I shouldn't say shortly. We do have 9 pages, and that can be a few programs. Today, we are taking up the five effects of meditation in the three worlds. So, how does this all work out on the lower 18 subplanes, which are normally considered the three worlds? Or from another perspective, the lower 21 subplanes are considered the three worlds. So, in the three worlds that the student of meditation will be conscious of if he has duly followed the course laid down. And so, there's no question here. We do have a course of study which has been presented to us. These effects are not specifically effects in the life as a parent to the onlooking world, such as greater love or spirituality or capacity to serve. Well, then we might ask, what then are they? And I'm going to make a bracket, if nothing else. So what then? Because that may be how we would expect these to work out. Okay. Okay. Sorry for the slight delay here. What I seek today to bring out are the indications in the physical brain consciousness of the student that he has done some of the necessary work. Let's, not take it too far. There's so much that DK has presented that must be done. Really, we have an impossibility of doing it all immediately anyway. That he has done some of the necessary work and is attaining somewhat the desired object, and keep this very clearly in mind. So, what are the indications? Okay. I do not seek to make clear all the many and various results achieved by the successful following of the occult laws of meditation. Well, that would just be too much, wouldn't it? I guess, we have the right to feel, if we've read carefully, somewhat overwhelmed by what has been presented as possibility. I deal here only with one phase of the matter, and that is the realization in the physical brain consciousness of certain results along the line of our immediate topic. And that is access to the masters. So DK is clarifying. Many things may be developed by following the course laid down, but now we are basically talking about something that seems to be dear to the heart of many, that is, access to the masters. This narrows down our subject to that of a conscious realization of the masters and of let's see here. And of some one particular master by the student in the physical brain. Now, for many of us, that might be Master DK, and his ashram may be our home ashram, as it were, but not necessarily for all. The majority of the esoteric groups are composed of individuals whose soul is the first or the second ray at this time, anyway. So Master Kutumi could be involved, Master Moria could be involved, and others too. But if you are a follower of Master DK's writings and it holds a centerpiece in your consciousness, then probably we're talking about one of those three masters, though not definitely so. Now, this is interesting. This realization is very largely independent of his place upon the path, of his nearness or distance from initiation. That is perhaps something we did not expect. Some very advanced egos may be working at this problem and be close indeed to their master, without being able to bring through to the physical brain specific facts proving to them their nearness. Well, maybe we can consider that an encouragement, at least for the future. Some affect this knowledge at earlier stages than others, i.e., consciousness of nearness to the master. It is dependent upon the type of body in use, so we can never say that although the body is not a principle, it is insignificant. It is very significant and helps us carry out on the outer plane, where maybe it is most needed, certain aspects of the divine plan. It is dependent upon the type of body in use and the work done in previous lives, resulting in a physical vehicle that is a fairly just exponent of the inner man. I've often thought that if the etheric body is a reflection of the causal body, this is very strange, okay. And if the physical body is a reflection of the etheric body, then we may not be far off in thinking that the physical body is somehow a reflection of the causal body and could be considered under some circumstances a just exponent of the inner man, if we know how to read the relationship. So we're speaking of nearness to the master, or to the awareness of nearness to the master. Off the man is a far greater caliber and attainment on the inner planes than he is on the physical. Now that's really something to be aware of and to hold our judgment, if we're inclined towards judgment, of others and their particular status based upon their outer representation. Maybe the physical body is not for them an a just exponent of the inner man. So many of our most earnest workers in this particular half century, 1900 to 1950, are working out evil karma through the possession of inadequate bodies, through diligence, application, high endeavor, and the long patient following of the rules laid down. There comes a time when the student is suddenly conscious, right within the physical brain, of certain excuse me, of certain unexpected events, an illumination or seeing that has been unknown before. So, you know, what he has said of the first half century may indeed be applicable to the second half century and even now. So the paying of the price at the end of the age of Pisces is in process. It is something that is so real, yet so momentarily surprising, that no amount of subsequent apparent disproving can take away from him the knowledge that he saw, he contacted, he felt. So we're working towards that. Yeah, now going on, as I have told you, as often I have told you, it is not possible in any way in this work to do more than widely generalize 60,000 million souls in process of evolving. Okay, now this is this figure, 6 billion, 60 billion we call it, or maybe they call it 60 milliard, something like that. And the big question is, not easily resolved, is this only on the Earth scheme, or within the Earth scheme, or does it apply to the whole solar system? Now, sometimes he seems to offer suggestion that this is a solar systemic figure. In some ways, it would fit better as a figure for our planetary scheme. And in this particular section, he seems to be implying that it is our planetary scheme, that whether in incarnation or out of incarnation, has a total of 60 billion souls, because 6/7, we're told elsewhere, of souls are out of incarnation. And only 1/7 approximately in incarnation. I want to point out also that he uses the word souls here and elsewhere, where he deals with these very large figures. He uses the word monads, 20 yeah, I think that's correct. It's usually considered to be 5 billion monads of power, 35 billion monads of love, and 20 billion monads of intelligence, which may include monads on the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh levels or rays. So, but that is oftentimes a solar systemic figure. And here, you know, let's just take a look that he equates the term souls with monads. Maybe I can find for you the reference. And here is that reference. A hint has been given us as to the approximate figure governing the monads. 35,000 million monads of love, 20,000 million monads of activity, and 5,000 million monads of power, making a total of 60,000 million human monads. The monads of power, though in manifestation, are as yet very rare in incarnation. Notice how he distinguishes between manifestation and incarnation. Manifestation may mean, you know, upon the cosmic physical plane, or especially within the lower 21 subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, or maybe simply within the cosmic ethers. They came in large numbers at the close of the moon chain and will come in again in full numerical strength in the last two rounds of the present chain. So in this particular case, he really does seem to be speaking of the monads associated with our particular planetary scheme. Elsewhere, he seems to connect these monads with the solar system. Let's see if I can find one more reference. And here is another reference. We can picture to ourselves the glory of this concept, the downpouring of the streams of fiery sparks. They're flashing forth into points of intensified fire as they meet conditions which produce occult ignition. And the constant circulation of the 49 fires constructed of the 60,000 million human monads. Of course, there is a humanity found on other types of planets too. And the countless streams of Deva monads in our particular solar system, 140,000 million. Okay, so let's see if we can also look at this 140,000 Well, we're not coming up with that, but it does exist for sure. Now here I'd like to show you a reference. it looks like it is from Esoteric Healing. In the first solar system, notice that he's not talking about a planetary scheme, apparently. In the first solar system, there was one dominant evolution, and it consisted of 100,000 million monads. I wonder why we didn't find that earlier. Okay. In the present system, there are two dominant evolutions, the human and the deva. There are, as earlier stated, 60,000 million monads. Now, does he mean in the earlier solar system, considering only the Earth scheme? That is possible. Add to the feminine evolution of the devas, consisting of 140,000 million, and you have the necessary 200,000 million in our second major solar system. This elucidates my statement anent this being a feminine system. So here we are, really, we are talking about, apparently, the entire solar system. In the third solar system, the total number in evolution will be the needed 300,000 million. Now there, that perfection requires of the threefold logos. And maybe I can use this as kind of I think that would be important. Sometimes it's hard to find because he uses sometimes written out words, and sometimes he uses numbers, as in 140,000 million. So we are still not understanding whether the 60 billion human monads of the present solar system are of the Earth scheme in the present solar system, with other thousand millions of monads that are human, given that type of humanity on other planets, or whether the grand entirety is 60,000 million human monads. As I say, when he tells us that 6/7 are out of incarnation, it does seem, given the number of human monads in incarnation now, that the 60 billion or 60,000 million would have to apply to our Earth scheme. I've been puzzling over that, you know, for a long time. Now here we are in Cosmic Fire on page 1059. And go out on some clear starlit night and seek to realize that in the many thousands of suns and constellations, and now we've learned there are billions, visible to the unaided eye of man, and in the tens of millions, yes, which the modern telescope reveals, there is seen the physical manifestation of as many intelligent existences. This infers that what is visible is simply those existences who are in incarnation. But only 1/7 of the possible appearances are incarnating. 6/7 are out of incarnation, waiting their turn to manifest and holding back from incarnation until, in the turning of the great wheel, suitable and better conditions. Looks like the word may eventuate. So given that on the earth right now, we can draw the analogy, I think, that maybe only 1/7 approximately of human monads are manifesting, or incarnating rather, we may be able to determine that since there are approximately 8 billion, so it would be 8/7, so 6/7 times 8, let's see. So if we multiply that figure about 8 billion, and we're told that in Atlantean days there were even more who were in incarnation, we're coming pretty close to the 60,000 million that could be applied to the Earth scheme. So the question here is, when he's talking about a feminine universe, a feminine solar system, he seems to be applying the figure 60 billion to the entire solar system. But when we look more closely at the numbers, that application seems to be applied to our planetary scheme within that solar system. So in sum, the final numbers are not ours to apprehend. He's giving us some approximations and leaving us with a little bit of a dilemma here as to the area to which the term 60 billion is to be applied. We'll just have to live with that. Okay. See, because when he says something like, you know, the Earth will manifest, or the planetary logos of the Earth will manifest in the next solar system. And when he says in the third solar system, the total number in evolution with that sort of hidden factor, will it be Earth evolution, will be the needed 300,000 million that perfection requires of the threefold logos. Well, it may be the solar logos, or it may be the solar logos. In any way, the number is huge, and when people simply look at the number of human beings in incarnation, they are missing the human monads, and in this particular case called human souls out of incarnation. Let's see here. Yes, here's that word, souls. 60,000 million souls. Well, we do know that monads have consciousness and soul is consciousness. So, okay. We can, under these circumstances, equate the two terms. So 60,000 million souls, I know I've taken a little while on this, but be nice to get straight about what's really happening. 60,000 million souls in process of evolving, each following certain rounds of lives, totally different from those of others, often offer a wide variety to choose from. And no one experience is exactly the same as a number, as another. So that's a huge variety, and it explains to us why Master DK has to write in generalities. But it might be generally laid down that there are five ways out of many possible, the many possible, which are of such frequent occurrence, comparatively speaking, as to warrant our enumerating them. All have been hinted at, but I may somewhat enlarge on the imparted data. So I'm going to just kind of emphasize there are five ways. Okay, going on. These are, now we're speaking of, that's not what I want. We are speaking of access to the Master. And we'll notice later that this access has much to do with the six stages of discipleship also. We are speaking of access to the Master. Seeing the Master and the Self within the cave of the heart. And here it is laid out quite clearly. Okay. Okay. So in the Master and the Heart meditation, you know, many of us have gone through the arcane school. And of course, you could stay a long time. But we have found the very first meditation to be related to the master in the heart. As you know, the student has often been told to visualize himself and the master about the size of a quarter inch within the circumference of the etheric heart. He is told to picture towards the close of his meditation the heart etheric, and therein build minute forms of the master to whom he is drawn and of himself. Then he proceeds to do with due and elaborate care, with the aid of the imagination and loving effort, working daily on his figures till they become very real to him, and their building and forming becomes almost an automatic part of his meditation form. Then comes the day, usually when astrological conditions are fit and the moon approaches the full, when he becomes conscious within his brain that these figures are not little puppets, the little puppets he thinks, but that he is within the figure, him representing himself, and that he stands literally and in all verity before the master. This, however simple it may seem, is a very occult method and important for those who would truly contact the master. About a quarter inch, and himself as well. Perhaps in meditation or according to what his creative imagination suggests. And according maybe to the images of the master that he conceives or which have been given. Thus far, there are, I think, pretty good likenesses of Master Moria, Master Kutumi, Master João Cool. And David Anrius has drawn some of the other masters as they appear to have appeared to him at that time. And we do have the Shroud of Turin and the elaboration of the appearance of what purports to be the body of the Master Jesus, when the impression on that shroud is filled out in color. So we have either with our own imagination or with actual images suggested to us, images that we can use. Now, the question is, who will use these images? Is it mostly those upon the first ray and the second ray, or will this become a method that other rays use also? So he finds that he is within the image and that he stands literally and in all verity, all truth before the master. This is one of the, I suppose, mysteries of the psychic realm. This occurs at rare intervals at first, And the consciousness of the fact is held but for a few brief seconds as progress is made, and every department of his nature and of his service develops. With greater frequency will come the experience. With longer periods, it will be marked until there comes a time. Let's get further. When the pupil can link up as easily in this manner with his master as earlier he formed the figures. So, this is promising for those who carefully work and build the images in the manner in which Master DK has suggested. So, just what did occur? The pupil has succeeded in doing three things. Identifying himself with the figure within the heart and aspiring to the master. So that's the first thing. And I'm going to just point out the three things. So he's identified himself with the figure within the heart. Point two, he has made or is making a definite channel between the heart center, wherein he is endeavoring to focus his consciousness, and its corresponding head center. Each of the seven centers in the body, as you know, as we should know by this time perhaps, has a counterpart within the head. Still a very occult matter, unsuspected, even by our normally highest science of medicine. Each of the seven centers in the body, as you know, has a counterpart within the head. It is the linking up of the center with its counterpoint in the head that illumination comes. So this, in the case in point, has been accomplished by the student, and he has connected the heart to the head center. And number three that he has accomplished, not only has he accomplished the two above things, but he has so purified that part of the physical brain that corresponds with the particular head center, that it can respond to the higher vibration necessitated and therefore accurately report what has transpired. Now, these are three factors out of five when it comes to contacting the master. And I want these to stand out a bit. And I'll do that in the meditative color, indigo. OK, Okay, so now we're going on to another method of receiving confirmation that some kind of contact has been made with the master. And I'm putting in a number here. The number doesn't really exist in the text, but it will help us orient ourselves. Especially, if you want to work with this finished text, which can be sent to you. So, recognition of vibration. In this instance, the method is not quite the same. The student becomes conscious during his moments of intensest aspiration. Note how important aspiration is. It's not something that is to be discounted and said, well, okay, it's only for aspirants. We're all aspirants, aren't we? The student becomes conscious during his moments of intensest aspiration in meditation of a certain peculiar vibration or sensation in his head. And it may be in one of three places. Okay. So I'm going to make note of that. One of three places. At the top of the spine, in the forehead, or at the top of the head. Well, at the top of the head, we have the Brahmarandhra center. And the major part of the Brahmarandhra, which is the 12-petaled lotus within the head. In the forehead, we have maybe one of two centers, Ajna, and then maybe a higher brow center. And at the top of the spine, which is not necessarily the same as the bottom of the skull, we have the throat center. Perhaps there's also, including a kind of an alta major vibration that's usually considered to be at the bottom of the skull. Okay. Now, all of these are sensations which we have to be aware of and make note of because they do definitely represent contact with some other dimension which is habitual to us. He says, I speak not here of the sensation that comes when psychic faculty develops, though there is an alliance between the two. I think we realize how much the Tibetan knows about the interior life. But I speak of a definite vibration that accompanies contact with one of the great ones, and discrimination of vibration is one of the most necessary accomplishments. Elsewhere, he tells us about all the many vibrations that can descend or arise. And how we have to learn how to discriminate between them. So, not just psychic faculty, though we cannot necessarily separate the two entirely, but of a definite vibration that accompanies contact with one of the great ones. And I wonder, how many of us could discriminate a vibration which originates with Master DK or Master KH or Master Moria, for instance, given the triangle that we usually work with. The student at first is only conscious of a feeling of momentary heightening, which takes the form of a ripple or movement in the head. I think for many this will be familiar. At first it may be attended with some discomfort. If felt in the forehead, it may cause tears and weeping. If at the top of the spine or base of the skull, notice how he basically equates those, or at least relates them as part of the same process. Exhilaration or even dizziness, and at the top of the head, a sense of expansion with a feeling of fullness, as if the limiting skull were too confining. And this wears off with greater use. Okay. I'm going to separate these just a little bit. I remember Mary Bailey talking to us about the downflow of energy and, you know, how it made one think that one's head was going to explode. So that must have been coming in at the top of the head. Okay, so this is, I'll put that in yellow, and I'll put the base of the spine exhilaration or even dizziness. This will help us locate and name the kind of vibrations we may experience. And if at the top of the head, a sense of expansion, a feeling of fullness, as if the skull were too confining. Now, as always, habituation renders the experience far more familiar and with less sort of noticeable, dramatic, unusual results. So this does wear off with greater use. It is all caused by a contact. This is not what I'm looking for. it got sidetracked. Okay. It's all caused by a contact momentary at first with the master. With some one master. Okay. And just so we can see what we're doing here. Okay. In time, the student comes to recognize this vibration and to associate it with some particular great one. For each master has his own vibration, which impresses itself upon his pupils in a specific manner. That's an important statement. I'm sure Alice Bailey was very familiar with this process. Of course, there is said to have been kind of a note that sounded in her ear when the Tibetan wanted to work with her. But who knows, you know, and then she was, after all, a student at home, really, in the ashram of Master K.H. And so, his vibration must have been familiar to her. In time, the student comes to recognize this vibration and to associate it with some particular great one. For each master has his own vibration, which impresses itself upon his pupils in a specific manner. The method of contact is frequently attended by perfume. Now, I have a little story to tell, whether it's accurate or not, but the last remaining disciple alive in that former cycle was RSW, Marion Walter. And my friend Keith Bailey and I were somewhat frequent visitors at her apartment. And she told us stories, you know. And the perfume apparently connected with the Tibetan, she said, was the carnation with the Master Kudumi, the white rose, and with Master Moria, the freesia fragrance. So this is something that may be of interest, you know, but it has to be researched, and probably it will be time spent in this research when people who are genuinely the students of the master compare notes and try to establish what the perfume, often called the astral perfume, will offer in terms of its fragrance. In time, the pupil learns how to raise his vibration to a certain pitch, and having done this, he holds the vibration steady until he senses the master's answering vibration or the perfume. And you know, you have to be able to justify the call. I suppose a chela within the aura can always justify it, and a chela on the thread, well, it's certainly the beginning of the process. So holding steady at a high point, waiting, and then the response will come. Now, this is clearly an active an active invocation, followed by an evocation, the answer, the answering call. And we find this also in the building of the Antikarana. As we project towards higher vibratory strata, we we'll probably not see the projection through all the way until it reaches that stratum, but there may be a response that comes from the higher stratum or plural strata, and which causes a sense of awareness that one's invocation has been met by an evocation. To touch the Buddhic permanent atom or the Atmic permanent atom, those are very high touches and maybe not possible for us as they reside on subplanes which are beyond the level of the master to negotiate, to polarize upon. They belong to Chohanship, but maybe some kind of response can come forth. Certainly, polarization within the monad on the monadic plane involves the sixth degree. But maybe, you know, starting from the third degree, the numbers three and six being so related, there can be a kind of attenuated response. Okay, so then the master has an answering call. Or an answer, let's say an evocation occurs. And then the student, he endeavors to merge his consciousness with the master's as far as may be, to ascertain the master's will and to understand what it is that the master has to communicate. So it's not just a question of the experiencing, the answering response. It is also a practical, knowing what has to be done, what has to be carried out. And as time progresses, and the response of the pupil grows, the master on his side will attract his attention to signal to him approval. For instance, by arousing this vibration in the head. So in this case, it's not just the aspiration of the student which is responsible for the vibration, but the master can actually stimulate it even more than might be possible with that answering call. So as time progresses and the response of the pupil grows, it's a Geminian kind of interplay, we might say, the master on his side will attract his attention or signal to him approval. For instance, by arousing this vibration. I sometimes, of course, we have the ellipse there, but I sometimes calling this confirmation. So all of this is to be worked out somehow through steady practice, right method, you know, and lots of patience, I would guess, lots of patience. Lots of patience. Okay. So we've done so far two of the 5 points. Two of the 5 points have been dealt with. The master in the heart, meditation, and also the arising of vibration in one of three places, usually. That area around the base of the skull and the top of the spine seems to be related. Both parts seem to be related to each other. We would have the alta major and throat center both being stimulated. And now we have other points to take up. So I think what I'm going to do is break it at this point with a new section of this section. There are three more considerations about contacting the master, and I'll use this for another program, whether I can do it right now or a bit in the future. We'll be beginning program number 60 at 292. And that will lead us into an entirely new section on the new esoteric schools. And we'll have to think about how we can handle that already. Excuse me, there is a compilation, a commentary, rather, of some 100 or more pages on the new esoteric schools, and it may be enough simply to read that. On the other hand, sometimes the method of using the video commentary helps it sink in more. Those new esoteric schools are what we are all motivated towards seeing emerge. They may not be due in any kind of fullness for a number of centuries, and yet DK tells us that certainly beginnings have been made, and even with regard to the advanced schools. So it's very good to have in mind at least what some of us may find to be very motivating activities for our coming incarnations in the Aquarian Age. Because the second ray, the great second ray, is the ray of education, in the sense that education leads to wisdom, and wisdom to right action. And so the hierarchy itself is characterized by the great synthetic second ray. So it's very important what these schools are going to do. And they will give a presence on the lower planes of the vibration of hierarchy. Of course, Masonry in its own way will be equally important, and the church in its own way equally important. Those are the three methods of approach. So anyway, for right now, we'll go on to the next section of this letter, which is pretty much the end of letter number 8. And I'll do that, of course, as soon as I possibly can. So meanwhile, lots of love and many blessings to everybody. Study hard, you know, and meditate as deeply as may be possible, and apply where and how you can, according to your own resourcefulness. We'll be seeing you soon. Bye-bye for now.